Liftoff.
That's what people are saying about shares of Goldman Sachs, but there's something in the charts that suggests now might be the time to sell. We'll explain. Plus, one stock is about to join the Trump rally, and here's a hint. We'll break it down. And a number of stocks short 52-week highs, and guess what? They could be going higher. High enough to get you rich. We'll give you the names. The action begins right now. Get right to it, because tech has finally joined the Trump rally. The Nasdaq surging more than 3% this week to a record high, and this as we saw big moves from tech titans Alphabet, Microsoft, Facebook, and Apple. So is tech your best bet, and which stocks can go even higher? Let's get in the money right now. Not a moment to spare, Dan.
Yeah, so those four stocks, we spend an awful lot of time talking about them, and oddly, over the last month, we have not been talking a whole heck of a lot about them. But what's interesting there, when you look at Amazon and Facebook, they have not really participated. They're still down about 10%. From their all-time highs. Possibly a valuation thing, possibly some of the issues in the quarter that they just reported in late October. But the other two, the ones that actually have very reasonable valuation, the Apple and the Alphabet, have started to join the party. This week alone, let's talk about Google here, it's up 5%. It had a really nice bounce off of what looks to be some support at 760. I think we have a five-day chart. Look at this rally, this stock. It's just joined the party, and Apple did too a little bit. But to me, I think this one's really interesting. When you think about it, there's a company expected to grow earnings next year 19%. It trades at 19 times that expected earnings growth. To me, it seems like it sets up for
valuation-wise, I don't know that Apple seems like the same kind of story that Alphabet does, right? Because it's a hardware company. We don't really know whether, you know, their system is basically what the future holds. But for Alphabet, it definitely is. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, it's a battle basically going on, as we were talking about before the show, between Oracle, Amazon, Microsoft, and obviously Alphabet competing in cloud space, for example. But this is where the future is at, and that's one of the few places where you can say this is what the future holds, yeah, and the valuation
is reasonable. The issue is the weakness or underperformance idiosyncratic to Google, or is it something else? It's been a rotational market, which is to pay for the big moves in banks and Caterpillar and U.S. Steel. People have basically been trimming their Amazon, their Facebook, their Google, their Microsoft. So what we know is that we've had 1,100 base points of relative underperformance versus the sort of the bottom 250 in the S&P. And now perhaps there's a little bit of money going back in there. But there also is this, that it's almost directly correlated to your tax rate. Those stocks that have low taxes are not performing because the tax cut's not going to help them.
And
the
what's going to help, they have $84 billion in net cash. This is Alphabet, okay? And that is certainly going to help them. They just announced a $7 billion buyback in October, and they are now going to have this cash that they can go and do some stuff with. We know that the LinkedIn-Microsoft deal just closed. That was a $26 billion deal. Alphabet has never made a sizable deal. So maybe that happens in 2017.
You're also not chasing a late rally here. This stock is trading exactly where it was 5 months ago.
Well, it also trades at 12 times next year's expected earnings,
right?
X cash.
Let's get to the trade.
Oh, you want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. So listen, here's the thing. The stock just rallied. We had that 1 week chart here. I don't chase stocks that do that sort of thing, but I want to look out and I want to target the next identifiable catalyst. That's going to be Q4 earnings. It's either going to come in late January or early February. I think you want to look to February expiration, and I think you want to use a risk reversal here. That's going to give you some time to actually not be just naked long premium, and kind of the stock could bang around a little bit between now and February, the event that I'm targeting. So today, when the stock was trading about 805, you could sell one of the February 760 puts at $13.50 and use the proceeds to buy one of the February 850 calls for $13.50. It doesn't cost you anything. You make money above 850. That would be a new all-time high on February expiration. That's up about 5.5%. The worst-case scenario is you put the stock down at 760. We identified that as a technical support level. It just bounced off of twice over the last couple months. That's also down 5.5%. But this trade strategy, if you have to get involved now, it gives you a little room to the downside. It gives you leverage to the upside. You're not exactly chasing it here. On a mark-to-market basis, as the stock goes down towards that short put strike, you will have losses. As it goes higher towards the long call strike, you will have gains. But nothing
essentially, look, this is a value play. I mean, if you think about it, that's really what you're interested in. I mean, because this stock has underperformed the market based on a relative basis for the better part of a year. So either is that relative underperformance an opportunity, or is it a trap, right? And that's to be determined.
I mean, 760 being the recent low, I'm assuming that's basically why you were choosing that lower strike. That's basically where it was, you know, just a few weeks ago. But look, I mean, the company is very cheap here. And 5% one way or the other doesn't really, you know, doesn't really make that much of a difference. I will say that any strategy, though, that gets you long, this is one of the places you want to be long, makes sense to me.
Can I make one point?
One point.
It's a really big point, though.
Okay.
People talk about Facebook. They're coming at them, right? They have 1.7 billion users. You know, Bob Peck, friend of the show here, told us this after their earnings. A great fact. Google has seven properties that have over a billion users. Yeah. Seven properties. When you think about the ability to monetize that and put some stuff together, I think that's a story in 2017.
I have one last question for Carter. That has to do with the broadening of the rally in technology. It seems like tech gained this week, and not necessarily at the expense of the financials. So what do you make of this?
No, that's right.
Sort of
Maybe to this point, it's been rotation, meaning coming out of here to go there. If it's new money entering the market, then you can get a real lift out of things. But I think the issue is this. All the things that you have just cited about Google were also in effect a month ago, and the stock's been poor. So the question is the underperformance at an end? It looks maybe day-to-day it's like that. But to get new highs, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's the burden of proof is on the bull.
Turning now to the president-elect, Donald Trump's cabinet taking shape with a common thread among his picks, a Goldman Sachs resume. John Harwood is in Washington with the latest. Hi, John.
Hey, Melissa. It's an intriguing common thread when you think about all the times during the campaign that Donald Trump described himself as a populist on the side of the working person in the country, somebody who was going to take on Wall Street at one point in the campaign. He said that Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz are both totally under the control of people at Goldman Sachs. Well, guess what? Gary Cohn, the COO of Goldman Sachs, is slated to become the head of the National Economic Council, actually becoming the third Goldman Sachs alum to hold that role. Bob Rubin was the first under Bill Clinton, Steve Friedman under George W. Bush, now Gary Cohn. And when you look broadly across the administration, you've got Gary Cohn is at the NEC, Steven Mnuchin, Goldman alum, as Treasury Secretary, and Steve Bannon, also Goldman alum, as the Chief White House Strategist. Now, there's one cabinet post that has not been filled. There's still a lot of mystery around it, and that is Secretary of State. Rudy Giuliani is now out of the running. Donald Trump put out a statement this afternoon saying that he respected Rudy Giuliani's decision to stay in the private sector. He would have made a good cabinet secretary, said he would call on him for advice as appropriate. But that's got to be a big disappointment to Rudy Giuliani, who put in so much work as a surrogate for Donald Trump in the campaign. Just like Chris Christie, who did the same, Rudy Giuliani is finding he is not getting the job that he wanted in this administration, guys.
All right. John, thank you. John Harwood in D.C. for us. Well, the Trump rally has given Goldman Sachs more than 30% boost since the election alone. But the chart master over here says the stock is priced to perfection. What are you looking at?
30% a month is a heck of a thing. And it's not, of course, specific only to Goldman. It's almost every other financial, right, in anticipation of what we know is going on at the long end of the curve and or prospectively Fed activity. But let's just try to put this current move in perspective. So a moving average, all it is just that. It tries to smooth out price, and you can use short-term, long-term. What I've found over time has a lot of efficacy is the 150-day moving average. But either way, let's just look at the sheer angle of this. Yeah, I mean, so the issue is that sustainable? And it's frankly almost so steep that it's going back this way, and you're not allowed to do that. Yeah, it's got to go out to the right every day. Anyway, this is a chart with the 150 moving average. Let me put this in perspective. Now let's do it going back a bit further. In fact, going back to the high of 2007, we're within a hair's breadth of that. But how far above we? If we were to plot this and plot that and plot this and plot that and say, what is the actual percentage above or below trend right now? Well, here's a chart going back since the inception of data when they IPO'd. Now, Goldman Sachs has only been this far above its 100 moving average, essentially 40%, twice. Once was 1999. Actually, it was March of 2000. That was the end of that. And the second time was coming off of the financial crisis low. This was in late 09, early 2010. And here we are now right at that thing. So the issue is, an angle like that, is that something, if you've owned it, God bless, but do you take some money off or do you buy more? Or maybe should someone take new money on Monday and buy more? I don't think so. All right. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of funny mentals, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mike. Just for fun. In 07, this stock is about to hit its all-time high. Its P.E. in 07 was 7.2. Its P.E. now is twice that. Return on equity. And this is really the key thing, the ability to profit. 21 times, 7 times. The whole operating business is different. It's not as robust as it was. Price to sales, 1.7, 2.9. The angle's steep. I think you let this go if you've made money here, and if you've got a short-selling book, I'd try it on the short side.
You want to let it go, Mike?
I do. You know, this has really been quite an extraordinary move. The problem that I have is that I have a hard time believing that any stock is really going to roll over between now and inauguration, right? So I think the way to play this is actually by selling an upside call spread. And the one I was looking at was the January 240-250 call spread. You could collect about $4 for selling that. At the time, Goldman was just under 240, so the price might be a little bit higher on Monday. Here's the thing. If the stock goes higher, the most you're going to risk is $6, but it would need to go straight through that and well through it. If it stays right here or declines, and I actually have a sense that it could actually trade sideways through the inauguration, then you're basically going to be paid in the meantime. I'm not interested in laying out premium to make short bets.
Well, here's one thing. I mean, listen, this move is extraordinary. And, you know, I was looking at a consolidated 215 for like a week, a couple weeks ago. I was like, it's going to roll over. And it's up now another, 10% or something like that. It's going to 250. It's going to make a new all-time high between now and inauguration. You don't come this far and not, it's like, you go to the prom
or is it a double top?
Prom queen.
But also, it's who you are in the market, right? So now if one has the ability, dexterity, i.e. implied maybe the money's not that big, or you could do options, you can do that. But the question is, if you're sitting there in a major endowment.
Yeah, but I'm saying this is the
wrong trade.
Do you
start to trim your loans? You have to.
I know.
Yeah? And, or do you take some measures, whether it's through options or something? But just to stay blindly long with an angle like that, over time, history shows that's not the right thing.
Let's assume it gets to 250. Let's debate the trade. Yeah. If it gets to an all-time high like 250, at some time between now and the third week of January, are you inclined to run out and buy puts between now and Christmas or between Christmas and New Year's? I don't think the answer to that is yes. I mean, we've talked about that. The likelihood that we're going to see a steep sell-off, you need some kind of catalyst to make that happen. What would that possibly be?
Right. We're not going
to
look at how traders, they just go for these big round numbers and they go for prior all-time highs. I mean, I think it's probably
so
a near certainty that it's going to trade 250 between now and January 20th.
It could very easily trade 245.
So if you're going to sell that half the money.
Selling the upside call spread, in fact, it's almost right there right now. I mean, we're talking about it's got another $7, $8 to go from
here. Okay, but where do you think it's going? Where do you think on a pullback it could go? Because that's
really
what we have to get
to. It's really not about whether it goes down. It's just that its ability to go much higher is very low.
Okay.
Got a question out there? Send us a tweet to @OptionsAction. And for everything Options Action, check out our website, optionsaction.cnbc.com. We've got videos from throughout the week and a recap of all of our trades. And while you're there, check out our newsletter. What are you waiting for? Here's what's coming up next.
It's just the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But if you miss the move, we've got names you can still buy. We'll break it down. Plus, here's how it feels to own bonds. But if you lost money, relax. We've got a way to get some of it back, and we'll explain when Options Action returns.
Welcome back to Options Action. As the major indices continue to make record highs, more and more stocks are joining in on the rally, and that's brought a breath of fresh air into the market. Dom Chu is in the newsroom to explain. Dom.
I see what you did there, Melissa, but let's focus on breath, that measure of range and scope, rather than that air in and out of our lungs. So here's what we're looking at. One of the more encouraging signs of the current market rally is not only the upward direction of prices, but also how many stocks are actually rising in this tide. So this chart shows the cumulative advanced decline line for NYSE traded stocks. Now, it's a measure of breadth. It goes up when the net number of stocks posting gains goes up and vice versa. So the upward trend means that there are more net advancers than decliners. And it's been that case for a while now, as shown by the upward trend you see in the chart. We're also getting other encouraging signs as well, like how many stocks are making new 52-week highs. We had around 112 of them in the S&P 500 yesterday make new highs. Today, there's 40 ones that are making new highs, including record highs for consumer-related stocks like Darden Restaurants, also transportation stocks like Southwest Airlines, Alaska Airlines, and also UPS as well. So, Melissa, that positive breath is what's giving bulls that breath of fresh air. Now, can it stay that way is the question. Back over to you guys.
All right. Thank you, Don. Have a great weekend. Dom Chu in our newsroom. So out of all these stocks sitting at record highs, what's the one name that's got more room to run? Mike's over at the smart board with his call to action. Hi, Mike.
Hey, so I'm actually taking a look at UPS, but first of all, we're going to take a look at buying a call as a strategy. Number one, you're obviously going to be bullish on a stock, but if the stock's trading at all-time highs, you might want to worry about downside risk. Secondly, the stock is trading at a higher-than-average valuation multiple, and you're hoping that the fundamentals catch up with the stock price. And finally, when the options prices are actually lower than average. So here we are, UPS trading very close to the 52-week highs right now. Obviously, valuations as well looking pretty stretched here. We can take a look, and we're trading probably at least 10% higher than we normally would. But interestingly, as all of this is going on, option prices are actually not far off the lows of the year. So very simply what we can do, we could take a look out to April. That's 4 months away. We can buy the 120 calls, which are essentially at the money, for $1.95. That's less than 2% of the stock price. So if the stock goes up a mere 2%, you're breaking even. Everything above that is gravy. But if it falls, you're risking a very small percentage of the stock price to make that bullish bet.
Oh, what do you think of UPS, which hit a new 52-week high today?
In the context of, obviously, again, this concept of something that lags that then comes back to life. So we know that Dow theory was triggered this week, right, with an index that peaked in late 2014, finally getting back to where it was, and yet still a major laggard relative to the S&P. It's a price-weighted index, so UPS and FedEx and others are a big part of it. I'm not sure there's much difference between this chart and, let's say, FedEx or some of the other names. They're all pretty stretched. I'm a fader of this big move.
I mean, their margins are a little bit better. UPS, you know, FedEx is their primary logistics competitor. This is a company that was a little bit, you know, caught over their skis a couple of times over the course of the last couple of years. You know, 2013 was bad. 2014, they had a lot of investment to basically make up for prior mistakes. 2015 turned out okay. Will 2016 actually be the time that they make it all come together? We'll see. But, you know, that's why you want to use a call to make a bullish bet.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, like you said, Mel, it's at all-time highs. It's up 35% from its January lows. It's up 25% on the year. It's trading above a market multiple. You know, I mean, so to me, this is a company that's growing earnings and sales mid-single digits. Here's the best thing about this whole segment is that Mike can look out to April. He can buy an at-the-money call. He can have exposure above $1.22 or something like that. That's 2% of the underlying stock price. That's how you should be chasing things if you are in my camp where you think it's just absolute insanity. Right here, you know, options are giving you the opportunity to do that. You don't want to litter your portfolio with that.
No,
though.
But if you make a 2% upside bet, and you would otherwise have bought the stock, so don't do that. Yeah. First and foremost, right? But you buy this call, and let's say this thing falls 10%,
you look like
it falls
a chump.
15%. You've lost 2%. Now you could actually sell a put right about where the thing was previously trading at maybe 17.5 times earnings.
Your error.
No, what are you doing? You're basically recollecting the premium, and you're not going to have exposure to the stock except for like a 15% discount to where it's currently trading. That absolutely makes sense if you have a bullish view on it.
Fair enough.
Still ahead. Dan obviously does not. Still ahead, the bond bloodbath continuing ahead of next week's big Fed meeting. But if you lost some money, we've got some ideas on how you can get that back. We'll explain when options action returns. Time for Total Recall. We take a look back on some of our open trades. Now, just last week, Cohen Carter made a bullish bet on potash.
So a rare circumstance, only happened 5 times. The spread is extreme, and everyone loves this, and everyone hates this. I think I'm going to take the other side.
Potash, I think a really simple way to handle this is to sell the January 18 puts. You could collect about 75 cents for that.
The stock at a 52-week high today. Carter, what do you think?
I guess with everybody else, maybe.
Yeah, that's
sure.
True.
But anyway, longer term you stay. I don't know what you think about the options at this point, but, I mean, it's a big bottoming out formation.
We've collected most of the money that we can. I think we're still comfortable being short this probably for another week or so. I mean, to Dan's credit, though, he had said, why not buy a call? And as it turned out, with this sharp move, that probably would have been a better play.
I think it would have been better play. I mean, this guy was saying this stock's going to explode. Don't sell a put.
10% in a week, it did explode. Yeah. That was a great call and a great call on your part, too.
Switching now to the bond market. Last month, Dan thought the TLT could move higher.
Here's the trade. Looking out to February, being a bit contrarian here, taking advantage of high option prices, I would look to sell the February 116 put. This was when the ETF was trading about 122 and a quarter, and using the proceeds to buy the February 127 call.
Now, as you know, Dan, there is more than a 90% chance the Fed is going to hike next week. So
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, I think, listen, this trade is a loser right now. That February 116 put is about 250. That's what your loss is in this position right now. That's about 2.5% of the underlying stock price here. But the stock is down 5%. And that's one of the reasons why I thought the risk reversal strategy was a great way to play it if you're unsure on entry. I think if you get a move back up in the TLT, that would be a move lower in rates next week because maybe it's just a bit more of a dovish statement than people are expecting, then you probably can wiggle out of this trade for a small
loss. There's one of the great adages in markets is buy the rumor, sell the news.
Right.
I mean, it's quite possible that move to 2.5% already priced in this.
Right. All right. Up next, tweets and the final call from the options bid. Take a tweet. This first one comes courtesy of Hidden Cash. You ask, what's your thoughts on straddling major binary events, for example, Brexit, U.S. election, OPEC meeting? Mike, what do you say?
You know, this is interesting because both Brexit and the election, we saw slightly elevated options premiums going into these events, but the outcome, if you got a surprise, turned out to be much larger than you expected. So that's really the thing you're looking for. You're going to be paying up to get those options, so just make sure that you're doing so with an eye towards getting that surprise and how big a market-moving event you think that will be. In this case, we got two very large ones.
All right, time now for the final call, the last word from the options pit. Carter Braxton Worth, kick it off.
You have great profits in Goldman Sachs. Anyone who's long does. Take profits and or use the options strategy here to get short.
Mike?
Yeah, if you think it's going to go down or trade sideways, I think selling call spreads on these stocks is a good way to play it.
Dan Nathan.
Yeah, so Google had this big run. I wouldn't buy it here, but maybe look at February risk reversal.
All right, looks like our time has expired. Thanks so much for watching. I'm Melissa Lee. For more Options Action, check out the website, optionsaction.cnbc.com. We'll see you back here next Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.